evening, everybody. Today is our Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting, but what it really is our first look at the proposed budget for next year. And our fearless CFO, John Woodruff, I believe is going to lead the discussions today. And I think, Jimmy, also you're going to... navigate these items. John, it's not expected that we're going to be taking any action today. This is merely a introduction of, you know, where we're at in terms of what we estimate the property taxes to come in at, as well as, you know, next year's expenses, and then to give you some guidance. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and get started here.
So, colleagues, any? Go ahead, John. Colleagues, do you have any comments for John before we start? Because I think this will be John's day, really.
I have a quick question. John, do you want to get through the entire
Please.
Presentation and we hold our questions till the end? Or if we have a question as you're going through something, would you like us to then let you know we have the question at that time? How would you like us to manage this? Because it is a virtual setting, and I want to make sure we all get our questions or comments in.
Yes, I appreciate that. I think to keep it fairly smooth, I'd like to do a few slides at a time and then take a questions on the material that was just covered and kind of, in other words, pause every few slides where it's a natural kind of breakpoint. And then that way we don't have to wait till the very end for all the questions, but it does help kind of make some progress, make some key points, and then be able to get some feedback. So that would be great if that's okay with the group.
I think that's wise. And what I'll do, team, is I'll just monitor the hand raising. So if you want, just, you know, put your hand up and I'll just keep track. And then every couple of slides, John, I'll pause you, whether or not we have any hands up, and I'll ask folks to comment. If there's no comments, we'll keep going. And obviously, if they're hands up, then I'll just call on them.
Okay, that sounds good. So this is the first of three scheduled budget workshops. And so what we're going to try to get through today is first go through the general fund and operating budget update and determine if we have a gap or a surplus. And then some preliminary thoughts of strategy and how to approach balancing the budget. And a month from now at the second budget workshop is when we would bring back a proposed balanced budget for you. So any thoughts you have about the approach and that kind of thing, that would be very welcome now on the front end so that when we get to the second budget workshop and bring back a balanced plan, that we've incorporated a lot of that feedback along the way. The second item is the preliminary capital budget. And there we have taken a shot at trying to balance it. And hopefully we can get close to final so that then we can spend most of the remainder of our time in these budget workshops talking about the operating budget, because I think that is where we're gonna have the most challenges. The third item on the agenda is a presentation by the BAC, Budget Advisory Committee Chair, Ron Stockman, regarding capital asset conditions. He's gonna give the presentation, but I'll be helping along the way. And the last item is, this is an item that's been on the Finance Committee agenda. It's related to capital. So we wanted to make sure this request was discussed today in case we could incorporate it into the capital budget item too. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and start with the first item, the general fund operating budget update. So let me try and share my screen and get that ready to go here. Did everybody see the presentation? Hello? Can everybody see the presentation?
I cannot, John.
No. It's not. No. There's no share screen yet.
There we go, John.
Can you see it now?
Yes. Yeah, there you go. And just yes. Do it. You want to do it in I guess this is presenter mode. So we're actually seeing both screens.
Okay, so that's not good. One sec. Is that any better?
That's great.
Okay, great. So let's get started here. So the first section of this presentation that I want to spend a little time on is property values. So when we talk about property values, they result in property taxes, which is 54% of the general fund revenue. So as a result, how we're doing relative to the budget is really all about how property value is doing. The property, in order to break even with our normal amount of inflation in the budget, we usually need about 4 or 5% growth in property values. So if property values exceed that amount, we usually have a surplus. If it's less than that amount, we usually have to make some reductions. So this year, the preliminary property values came out to 3.5%. That number will get updated on July 1st with the final numbers. Usually the numbers are pretty similar, might be slightly higher, like a tenth of a percent, you know, 1 or 2 tenths of a percent higher with the final numbers. So you can see that we lag behind the county, which is a big average if you think about it. When we first got out of the recession, we were way ahead of the county. We were the first to recover. We're now lagging behind. The areas that are doing well are more middle-class type areas, like Hialeah, cities like that, that have a lot of housing stock like that. So our kind of housing stock, more luxury or high-end condos, isn't doing as well right now. Okay, so if you looked at this property value trend on slide 4, you know, I think a normal person would look at this and think, hey, we're at 3.5%. That's more than last year, 3.1%. Maybe we bottomed out and now we're starting to pull out of this. And I want to make sure everybody here is super clear that I don't believe that that's the case. Why? Because this number, I believe, is getting skewed a little bit because it's actually made up of two numbers. It's made up of new construction and growth in existing property values. So let's look at new construction. So new construction moves around quite a bit. In any given year, there's projects in the development pipeline, and when they finally hit the tax roll, you know, our norm is usually $200 to $300 million. This year, $1.2 billion. So the only reason we're at 3.5% is really because of new construction. Of that 3.5%, 3% of it is coming from new construction. So it's good news and reinforces how important new development is to the city, at least financially. But I think it's a little, you know, it's skewing the picture. Oftentimes we're asked, well, what were the properties driving that increase? You can see there's a development of Fisher Island. There's the Ritz-Carlton, North Meridian. There's David Martin's project, 8701 Collins. Those are some of the major drivers. So the chart that I keep a close eye on, and I encourage everyone else to do so as well, is really the existing property value trend. If you look at this trend, you can see that we're dangerously close to zero. We're at 0.5%. And it doesn't appear to me that we have bottomed out yet. So what this is to me, it's a red flag about the following year. We're focused right now on balancing next year, 2021's budget. But this concerns me, given that 2022 could easily be just as bad or worse if we haven't hit bottom yet. So just give you a little sense of what's happening in the county. There's five cities who had negative values this year, negative overall values. Bal Harbour, minus 4.2%. Aventura, minus 3.2%. North Big Village, minus 1.5%. Key Biscayne, minus 1.5%. Surfside, 0.3, minus 0.3%. So, you know, that's a concern. And we're actually engaging a consultant that helped us with a prior analysis to take our property value information for the last 10 years and try to really get to what is driving the decrease so we can understand better and potentially be able to take some strategy or actions that could potentially impact that. I think it's very important that we understand what's driving this. So at this point, I think it's a good time to just pause for a second and just any questions about property values at this point.
I have a question, Ricky. John.
Here, go ahead, sorry. And then Commissioner Gongora and then Samuel.
Okay. And I've never had to raise the hand, so I've got to learn how to do that. Okay. John, I looked at the list, and we talked about this the other day. It seems like all the coastal communities are going, maybe they have higher property values along in parts of them, but all the coastal communities seem to be having, are going negative. We're actually among the coastal communities. We're still the only one that looked like it was even positive, even though it was just barely at 0.5. Are we looking at what they're getting as where we can go? Is the expectation that we're just doing a little bit better than them, but we should expect that we're going to get that same slope, perhaps even a slightly negative slope?
I'm afraid that could be the case. I'm hoping it's not, but that's where we hope to be able to, with that analysis, that additional analysis, be able to tease out what some of those drivers are. We know that we're doing things other folks aren't. So, hopefully that's something of an advantage. But I think we need to know what those things are to make sure that we're aware of them, especially for policymaking purposes.
When you're talking about possibly resiliency efforts and things like that, because it didn't, when I looked across all of the coastal communities, it did seem like we were doing better, and I don't know why that would be, although no one should be happy at this point, because it does seem to be I don't know if it's a market correction or if it's something, but something sort of happening that all of the coastal communities are having a downward trajectory, and many of the interior communities ones that are changing at this time seem to be some of them very significantly going in the other direction. In fact, it looked like the further you went, inland, the higher the increases.
Yeah. So that's the kind of dynamic we really want to understand. It could be as simple as that. There's too much inventory of condominiums, on the water, right, or higher end condominiums. But I wouldn't want to assume that. I think we would all be more comfortable if we understood a little clearer what that dynamic really is.
And my last question, when do you think you'll get, what's the timeline for this report? Because I think it'll be very helpful. Maybe folks in the real estate industry who know just from experience what it is anecdotally, but you're going to try to figure it out a little more in an organized way. When do you think you'll get back to us on that?
We're planning on having that ready for the next budget workshop. So we'll have that for July 17th. That's the plan, because we do think it's that important that as policymakers, you have that information, right now while we're planning ahead for next year and possibly the year beyond that.
Thank you.
Okay. Just two questions, John. Number one, I noticed that Normandy Shores, one of our areas, is actually the highest increase that you placed on your chart. Is there a breakdown of different regions of Miami Beach, or why do you think Normandy Shores was so much higher than the other areas?
The only reason we have Normandy Shores split out the way it is because we have a special taxing district there. So as a result, we get that information from the property appraiser. We don't really have any special breakdown for any other neighborhoods if I had to speculate, I would just, I think that, again, if condominiums are not doing well, single family homes are probably doing better. I'm guessing that that's part of the dynamic there.
Okay. I agree with that thought, by the way. My second question was, you know, being that in your two charts, the property value increase years do not coincide with the peak new construction years. In fact, some of our highest property value increases were not years of any new construction. Was that just based on market circumstances? Is there anything that we can do to increase property values or incentivize building of single family homes, since those seem to be increasing the most in value?
Yeah, that's the kind of information that I think hopefully our analysis that we get for the next workshop will help with and hopefully inform some decisions making that could help the commission, so that we can be more proactive maybe in our strategy, you know, in terms of how we approach development, those kinds of things.
Okay, before the next budget workshop, I'd like to sit down with you and focus on that question a little bit more and see what it shows and guides us. That's it.
I think I was up next. So, John, thank you for those introductory slides. Very much look forward to that deep dive so that we can really you know, get a handle on these important trends. I'm curious about COVID-19 and potential impact. Yep. These numbers do not reflect that. And I could see some areas where it could be a challenge. I could also see some positives of maybe some people migrating from areas like New York here. And I would just wonder how you're thinking about that and what impact it might have on the next year. It seems like it might be a risk factor.
Yeah, absolutely. The activity, you know, that's happening this year will be reflected in the following year, FY 2022's property values. And it's hard to say if it'll be a positive factor or a negative factor. As you pointed out, we might be seen as a safer destination to other more urban areas because a lot of our activities and amenities are outdoor in nature. That could help and bring in potential home buyers. At the same time, you know, there's probably very little real estate activity or virtually none happening, you know, for several months. Not sure what impact that is, you know, especially if it lines up with certain key times of year when folks tend to move, like prior to the summer after kids finish school year, that kind of thing. So it's hard to say. I can't say that we have any good answers at this point, but hopefully, you know, when we get that analysis, it'll help us, if nothing else, as the picture gets clearer.
Thank you.
Any other questions, or can we keep going?
Sorry, guys, can you hear me? My internet is having trouble. I don't know why.
Okay, I'm not sure if we can hear the commissioner, but I think it's a good time to just keep moving here in the presentation. So, PJ, let's see if we can get it back up.
All right, John, you should have the controls. You can go ahead and start the screen share and you can get back where you left off at.
Can you see the presentation?
Hello.
PJ, can you see the presentation?
No, it's not up yet on the screen.
No.
There we go, it's coming along. Yeah, that's the...
Okay, one sec.
So that's going to be the route that you take, John, to launch, it seems like, because I think you have two screens going on. So it's trying to figure out which one's but you're live now.
How's that?
That's perfect.
Okay, so let's jump in. Before we jump in, I just want to make it clear that normally when we go through this exercise, we identify a budget gap in the general fund. This year, we're kind of getting hit with the double whammy, which is one, low growth in property values. Secondly, the impact of COVID-19. So we're trying to track those two impacts separately so that we, because each of them will have different types of solutions. So as we work through this and we get to the budget, in this case, gap numbers, we're going to have one that's more for the permanent situation from low growth in property values that we need to right size to fit that. And then we're going to have the COVID-19 impact, which is a little bit more temporary in nature, if you will, and we'll have different solutions to address that. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up as we move forward here. And there is a lot happening in the budget, which is making it a little bit harder to follow. So I'm just going to do my best to communicate it, but I do encourage anyone who has questions to go ahead and ask, because it is somewhat confusing this year. So the way we approach building this budget is we take all the programs and services from last year, and we just apply whatever the inflation factors are, and we'll go through what those are, and we determine what the outlook is. Does it look like we're going to have a surplus or some kind of gap? And in this year, we're certainly going to have a gap. So some of the assumptions, I'm going to talk more about them, but just to list them out so you can see what they are. We had a $1 million transfer from the parking fund. We learned this year, dealing with COVID-19 impact, that parking fund can't really afford to do that anymore. So we need to address that this budget cycle. Number two, we've been using $4.4 million of one-time RDA funds. And I'm going to get into that in more detail as well. And at some point, we were hoping to wean ourselves off of that. And because of this low growth in values, we don't feel like that plan is working. So we have a new plan for you, which is number three, where we have a reduction in pension bond debt. So we had some bonds from 2005, where at the end of that service schedule. And so that's a recurring savings that we think we can apply to number two there. So I'm going to get into that in more detail in a minute. Also, the general fund gets a big $36, $37 million transfer from the general fund every year to pay for folks who work in areas like MXC, those kinds of tourist type areas. And when we did the resort tax projections, which I'm also going to go into more detail, we feel that the top end of the new normal for resort taxes will probably be about 90% of where we were before. And so we feel that we need to adjust the general fund to reflect that. We're also transferring the building department, all the revenue and expenditures, as well as the inspector general revenue and expenditures into standalone separate funds. Those are recommendations from the IG, and we certainly agree with them. So that just makes it harder to follow the apples to apples comparisons between last year and this year. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this, the RDA transfer of $4.4 million. So let's jump ahead here for a second. So if you look at this slide, this was our original planned use of RDA funds, that we have this 4.4. It's not a good budget practice to balance your budget with one-time funds. However, we had a plan to step it down over time, about $1 million a year, because in 2024, this money's going to run out. And so what we're coming to realize is that we're not going to be able to step this down probably $1 million a year. If you see the challenges we're having in 2021, and more than likely 2022 could be bad or worse. So we have a different solution. We have pension bond debt service savings. We're going to have savings of $3.3 million next year, and then an additional $1.2 million the following year for a total of $4.5. So that 4.5 would totally offset that RDA money that we've been transferring over. And the best part of that is not only does it address that long-term situation, but it also frees up the RDA funds that we have for one-time purposes the way we should be using them. And the first thing we can use it for is this year's COVID budget gap. Again, that COVID gap is more temporary in nature. So we think we can take at least $3 million of this RDA money and apply it to that budget gap. You'll see how much that is later in the presentation. But and then once we get past that, we really want to help aggressively replace our fleet, especially the police cruisers, where we have an opportunity to replace the existing ones with hybrids, because there's a huge fuel saving that will help out the operating budget. So with the investment there, we can get recurring savings in the operating budget. And then we always have capital needs that we can apply some of these funds to. I think when Ron Starkman gets to his presentation on item three, you'll hear quite a bit about that. So again, we have this parking transfer to the general fund that parking can't afford to do anymore. So we need to eliminate the transfer and address it as part of this year's budget. So I'd like to just pause there again in case anybody has any questions about that before we move further. Any questions?
I see Commissioner Gongora's hand up.
Sorry, it's up from last time. Let me take it down.
Okay. I don't see any hands up.
Okay, then we'll keep going. So usually how we get to the gap or surplus number is we go through the changes in revenue, changes in expenditure, then revenue minus expenditure equals whether we have a gap or kind of a surplus. So there's a lot of items here to follow. Like I mentioned, it's a little more complicated than usual, but these are the revenue variances. So first off, you see the property tax increase from the values of 3.5% going up. You'll see a negative number for the one-time use of fund balance. That matches usually pretty closely on the expenditure side, one-time expenditures. So when we have one-time costs like studies for sea level rise and resiliency and different things like that, we tend to use one-time funds, and they come usually from savings at the end of the budget year. We get this transfer from resort tax, and as I mentioned earlier, we're reducing it by 10% because we think the new normal in resort tax will top out more about 90% of where we are today for at least 2 or 3 years. Parking can't afford to do that transfer anymore, so that we're backing that out from the revenue. You see the transfer of building to a standalone fund. These are the revenues. You'll see that on the expenditure side as well. Flamingo Park Tennis Center had been handled by an external vendor. We're now insourcing it, at least for the coming year. And here we went through and tallied up all the COVID-related revenues that are probably going to experience a dip for at least a year. And in the general fund, they're adding up to $7.8 million. There's more in the resort tax fund, but we'll go that over that next. So that's the revenues. Now let's take a look at the expenditures. So this slide shows a lot of the normal cost drivers in our city budget. I think it's worth a good hard look. First is health insurance. We are self-insured, and so our health insurance, we look at our trends and see where we're going, and oftentimes we experience increases of 5 to 10%. Right now our going in assumption is 10. We're a little challenged this year looking at trends because a lot of folks are avoiding going to the hospital and putting off treatments. And so if the latest quarter looks good, maybe, you know, subsequent quarter might be extra high when folks go and start going back to get treatments that they're putting off now. But we're looking at that, and we're going to do our best to scrub that and potentially get it somewhere between 5 and 10. The pension line here. Our city pension plans, usually, you know, depending on various things, such as how they do with their investments, or if there's been changes from the state on what kind of mortality tables and things like that we have to use, there's usually an impact, $1.6 million in this case. Just to give you, a lot of people ask me, well, how are the pensions doing right now with COVID impact on the stock market? I was checking, I'm a trustee on the general employee plan, And just to give you an idea, our investment goal is 7.4% growth. At one point, we were at minus 6%. Now, the latest snapshots were about a positive 2%. So, you know, hopefully by September, that'll be a little bit close, somewhere between 2 and 7. But it will more than likely not hit 7. And so that will be an impact again the following year. So we'll keep an eye on that. So several of the items here, like the 5% step increase for police and fire, there's annualized impacts of the collective bargaining agreements, 1% COLA, 2% merit. A lot of those are bargained in advance. We're in the third year of a three-year CBA cycle. And so, you know, ideally, we wouldn't be adding these additional costs to the budget. But at the same time, we're contractually obligated. So we are planning on meeting with the union presidents and see if they're willing to work with us on some of these costs. But it's something that we are contractually obligated to provide. Additional items here, you see the building moving to a standalone fund, the one-time expenditures also. So those are all related to, you saw those in the revenues as well. So the preliminary gap here looks like about $6 million. This is without the impact of COVID-19. Remember, we're going to do our best to keep those two things separate so we can address them differently. So a $6 million gap, that may not sound, I don't know, to a lot of people, but we have been making a lot of cuts to the budget the last few years. That's going to make that more challenging. So for example, public safety is 60% of the expenditures in the general fund. So we always do our best not to cut public safety if possible. But over the last 3 years, we cut 66 positions or 3% of the workforce. So that other 40% of the general fund budget that's non-public safety has been hit pretty hard over the last 3 years as we've had these low property values. So it's going to be a challenge to close this gap as we move forward. I want to make a point here that I'm always looking ahead. Remember, we were looking at that trend in the existing property values and what would happen if next year or the following year, we didn't have that great impact from new construction. What if we were more at like 1.5% growth? So I just put some factors here. The value of 1% property value is about $2 million. So let's say instead of 3.5, we land at 1.5. That $6 million gap would grow by $4 million, and we'd be at $10 million. So in other words, not this time next year, we could be facing a $10 million gap in our budget, just to give you some perspective. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that we are having very challenging fiscal conditions. I certainly would not recommend adding any additional costs to the budget if at all possible. This is the same slide, but now we're adding in the John, impact from COVID.
John, it's Ricky. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
We can just hear to stop you on that point because you made it. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, just to stop you and pardon the interruption, but just because you made the point, I don't want to move on from it, you know, and to highlight it that, you know, the change of 1% in property taxes is equal to, you know, $2 million. And I think your concern is well-founded because of the 3.5% increase in property values this year, so much of it came from new development. We can fairly easily predict what is coming online next year in terms of new development. And off the top of my head, I don't know, but I'd like to ask staff to, you know, come back to us with that of what we expect to open next year. I don't think there is a whole lot. I could be wrong. And I know that a lot of the development projects that we have in the pipeline are still years away from coming to fruition, like, you know, 500 Alton Road and the Convention Center Hotel, the Aman Hotel project, if that gets full approval, you know, all of the potential development in North Beach. I mean, these are years and years away, and I'm a little concerned that there's not much development in the pipeline. So your concern may not just be for next year, it might be for subsequent years. And so I think we need to brace ourselves for that. So I'd like to ask staff to maybe just give us an analysis of what they expect
in the next year or two for new development to be coming in. The other thing and that I'm concerned about now is our existing property values, particularly in the commercial areas, as we see more vacancies because, you know, tenants, they're not reopening, those properties are going to reset. When you don't have tenants paying rent, all of those property owners are going to go to the property appraiser and justifiably argue that their properties are not worth what they were in, you know, 2018, 2019, so that they're going to get reset. And that's going to have an impact on us. So I think we need to start not just looking at 2021, but, you know, subsequent years, because, you know, we know our costs will continue going up. Our revenues are going to be impacted beyond just 1 year.
If you have that's a great
comments
point
on that, or Jimmy, if you have any comments.
No, Commissioner, we agree with that. Obviously, as John mentioned earlier, the trend line on property values, existing property values is obviously in a negative direction. We are going to do that analysis to try to figure out, is it more single family based? Is it condo based? Is it, you know, sea level rise concerns, whatever, but clearly we have to go forward budgeting with that recognition. We can certainly do the analysis, what properties will be coming online effective. They do these for 12/31. Next year's property values will be based on 12/31/20. And we can certainly look at the COs or TCOs that have been issued this year that would and try to give some estimate of what additional property can come on. You know, one of the things we're going to have to look at, just to piggyback a little bit on John's comment, clearly we always, you know, public safety is the main priority of government. And it's fairly typical that in most local governments, public safety has a big chunk of the budget. We have, you know, you look earlier, we had some really good years here where we added a lot of new services that we didn't used to offer them. And so we need to think about some of those. You know, again, I'm not saying any ideas, but, you know, when I got here, we didn't have any park rangers. We didn't, you know, we didn't have trolleys. We didn't do a lot of things. So we've added a lot of services, and we may just need to rethink how we do those services, how we fund them, et cetera, as part of trying to squeeze out of the 40% a lot more savings, including outsourcing some things in the new marketplace. So we'll there's a lot of things we're going to be looking at when we come back in about 3 or 4 weeks to talk about how we balance that.
Yeah, Jimmy, you raise some good points, and you highlight a few services that we have added, you know, during your tenure, and, you know, they've certainly provided a lot of value to our community, but some of them are quite expensive. Trolley's very expensive, the park ranger department and others. What do you suggest how we handle that? You know, what are you thinking in terms of, you know, itemizing potential things we really need to consider from a policy matter? And, you know, when do we have that meeting? Is that the next meeting, which is going to be looking at the operating budget? Because these are things we need to really seriously be thinking about. A tight budget's not going to be a one-off, I believe. No. I don't think we're looking at just 2021. We're looking 2-3 years at least of very tight fiscal constraints. And we're not going to be able to kick the can down the road. We're going to have to make some real hard decisions. And I want to give us all enough time to reflect on it and have the appropriate forum to deliberate on these things. So what are you thinking in terms of timing and format for something like that?
Obviously, it's our mission to come back at the next meeting, which is, I think, what is it, July 13th, John?
17th.
July 17th. We're going to come back with you with a proposed balanced budget. We were already thinking about a lot of these things. I'm classic, perfect example. You know, we spent $12 million a year on our previous trolley service. You know, we do get some surtax dollars for it. And so we're looking at what could we provide at a third that number? What level of service that would may not be what we had before, but certainly is a lot better than we had 7 years ago when we had nothing. We're looking at are there services we provide that can be done more cheaply and effectively by outsourcing them. We're going to look at a lot of that kind of stuff. You know, park rangers, are there other ways to address security in parks? Are there, you know, looking at some of these things? Also, you know, there's a lot of things we fund in the MXC with the resort taxes, looking at, how the MXC operates and whatnot. You know, is that some stuff that can be shifted to some of the businesses who are high risk businesses that should be putting more of the cost? we're going to, you know, try to look at all of that. Our goal is not to try to reduce service, but acknowledge that. But, you know, and we're trying to find savings within the organization. But to get to these kind of numbers, you know, it may need we may need to do some thinking outside the box on some of this stuff.
And I see Commissioner Gongora's hand up. Michael, before I call you, just – and then, colleagues, one thing I'll throw out there since we're thinking about where we have a July meeting, you know, this is going to be, I think, a very heated, difficult discussion we're going to have, and some hard policy decisions are going to have to be made. At what point do we feel comfortable meeting physically in a group? You know, we can do it in a space that's large enough to have social distancing and make folks comfortable, but you know, might we have this next meeting in a public realm, you know, whether it's even in the Fillmore or someplace where, or the Colony Theater or someplace where we can really spread out and have the public participate. We can answer that later if you want, but I'd be comfortable doing it, but it's up to you guys. Michael, you have your hand up?
Sure. Following up on your point, and then I'll go to the point I really was going to make. Yes, I would be fine with meeting in a sufficiently physically distanced space, because it is hard to do these meetings on Zoom. Looking at the agenda for today, last October, after the budget meeting of September, I placed an item on the Finance Committee agenda to really review each department for justification and efficiency. And the item's been deferred every month. It's deferred again till July. So it's obviously not going to be done before we have to take the votes on budget season, which I'm disappointed by, but it is what it is. But going to the heart of that referral and my question about the budget year after year, I served on 2010-11 when those were the bottom out years, when things were really, really bleak. And I think we did a good job of balancing the budget and operating the city during that time with less money. And I think if you were to go back and look at the resident reviews that they do biannually of the commission, I don't think you would find that they're dramatically different than they are today. Residents were pretty satisfied with the level of services. What would be helpful for me to know as we go forward, especially if the years are going to be bleak again, as some people predict, I'm not sure that they will be, is what are all of the services and staffing that we've added since those kind of bottom out years? We've added a lot of departments. We've added staff. We've added trolleys. We've added an inspector general. We've added funding of education. There's a lot of stuff that we've added that's expensive to carry forward. And that's why on each of those votes, I've always brought up, you're putting this item now and you're making it really difficult for future commissions, because nobody wants to be the one to take anything away. But just when you're in a peak year and you keep adding and adding and adding to get to your budget, you run into a problem eventually. So at least for me, and I think it would be helpful for the entire commission, especially the two newer members, is to show what have we added over those years as we're moving forward.
Commissioner, we've done that analysis. I know some of the previous either retreats or whatever, we've had that information. We can update it. And you're right, there's a lot. You know, we've added six or seven additional lifeguard stands that have impact. We've added units, a pumper unit up in North Beach with additional staffing. We've added specialized police units. We've done a lot of different things to the budget, and we can certainly quantify all that additional work that's been done. We'll be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, as Jimmy mentioned, we do have that information, and we also have the latest program budget as well that hopefully, maybe following this meeting, we'll send out both of those documents so that the commissioners have them handy. And any input you have from, you know, reviewing those documents, it'd be great to get them sooner than later, so we could try to incorporate that feedback into the development of the proposed budget as we try to balance. At this point, I'd like to just keep going, and we're almost done, if that sounds okay.
Yeah, John,
okay, so our gap of $6 million, that's more the permanent gap. We also have an impact from COVID-19 that gets it to $13.8 million. Okay, well, one of the things we learned this year when we had to deal with the impact from COVID-19 was that the resort tax fund gets impacted dramatically with the revenue impacts, and it's hard to cut costs in the revenue and in the resort tax fund because most of the positions in the city are in the general fund. So there's a relationship there. So we kind of, I want to talk about what the resort tax fund looks like as we look at our overall budget gap, if you will. So this is a very difficult funding source to project. I do want to give you a little comfort that our office worked with the BCA board as well as the GMCVB to, you know, talk about expectations, things that they're expecting to see. Just to share a few thoughts from that process, they feel the leisure market will likely rebound faster than expected. However, the rates that they charge will likely be lower for at least the next 3 to 6 months. Someone even called it a rate war of sorts, you know, for at least a few months. They are expecting fairly high occupancy for 4th of July. So I'm going to meet again with the same folks after that to see if we can, you know, learn anything new that would help inform the next few months and the coming year. They feel that demand during the summer should be fairly good due to some targeted ad campaigns they're going to be doing to folks within driving distance. Miami Beach is seen as a safer destination than other domestic destinations. Most of our activities outdoors, like the beach, that's on. We're a preferred domestic destination market when folks avoid traveling to international destinations. So the leisure market looks fairly rosy, just that the rates won't be generated that we're hoping for, at least for a while. On the conventions and corporate meeting side, it looks like it will take longer to rebound. Most of those events are booked well in advance. They did feel that it was critical if we're able to host Art Basel and the national championship successfully. If we aren't able to host either one, they really feel like that's going to be a problem. So I think as policymakers, you know, anything we can do to ensure success around Art Basel or a national championship is really key moving forward. So when we did these, so as I mentioned, we did these projections, and the way we approached it is we kind of looked at each quarter every 3 months and said, okay, where are we going to be? So in September, we think we'll be closer to 50%. And then the next 3 months, we moved it up about 10% to 60, then 70, then 80. And by the time you get to the end of the fiscal year, we're topping out at 90, which we think is kind of the high end of the new normal. So that results in a $22 million impact to the resort tax under the likely scenario. And just give you a feel for how much less revenue that is overall on an annual basis, that's about a 25% reduction in revenue. In other words, we're projecting we'll receive 75% of what we normally would have done compared to a year like 2019. So that impact is something we need to take into account. So when we talk about balancing the budget, this is really the key slide in this presentation because it takes both the COVID gap and the non-COVID gap. And so the non-COVID gap is more of the permanent gap that we need a right size to fit. And as we talked about, our outlook isn't very positive either. So it's key that we make, you know, that we cover the $6 million gap from, you know, what I'd call real measures to balance the budget. The COVID-19 impact of $32 million, that's more one-time in nature. And hopefully, you know, we learned a lot in the budget balancing plans that we developed for the current year budget to deal with COVID. And one of the things that I think I'd like to put out there, put it on the table for consideration as we approach balancing that $32 million is that I think, you know, I'm not sure we can come up with $32 million worth of cuts, at least not easily, and still preserve most of our service levels. I do think if we cut that number approximately in half and took the approach of potentially using about $15 million of general fund reserve and then the rest of it, about $15, $16 million, I think we could come up with some temporary type reductions to fit that. And of course, as we move forward in time, if those numbers get updated and they're any better, we would obviously try to do our best to maximize the cost savings and minimize the amount of general fund reserve we would potentially have to use. If you take, you know, just to do the math, our general fund reserves at $80 million in the FY20 budget balancing plans, we talked about potentially using about $5 million. If you add that to the 15 we're talking about here, that'd be about 20. So 80 minus 20 is $60 million. And that's still above, just slightly above our 2-month general fund reserve minimum best practice amount. So I would like to just get a little feedback from the commission at this point in time as to whether that sounds reasonable and a decent approach, because as we approach coming, you know, balancing the budget and coming back in a month, it's important that we kind of agree if that's reasonable, so that we don't have to kind of start from scratch if we came back 3 or 4 weeks from now. So if we could have a quick discussion on that, I think it'd be great.
John, you mentioned the reserves, correct?
Correct.
You know, all I want to make is a general statement that, yes, the reserves are there for a rainy day, and boy, are we ever going to be dealing with a rainy day right now. I mean, these are what the reserves are there for. However, having said that, I want to keep in mind that I want to be very careful, not be afraid to use a little bit of it, but make sure that we really do maintain a healthy reserve, because we're still going through hurricane season right now. We don't know what the effects are going to be in the next few months. You know, hopefully we don't have to deal with any of those other things to make 2020 just the perfect year. But in the event that we do, we need to be mindful of that. And then we need to understand that moving forward in the next fiscal year, when we're dealing with these budget crises, that we're not going to maybe be able to replenish our reserves moving forward. And how does that leave us for the next fiscal year? So I want to keep that in mind. So I think you have a good kind of handle on it, John, but I just want to put it for the record that we need to really be careful how much of that reserve we use and how we plan on, you know, looking forward when we still don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. We still don't know what to expect.
Absolutely.
Any other comments? Commissioner Gongora, you have your hand up, and Mayor Gilbert. Sorry, John. John, okay. Commissioner Gongora and then Mayor Gilbert. You have your hands up.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John. I think that was a good description. So we had $80 million in reserves we'd built up. We've used five. You're suggesting we hold 15, which leaves us with $60 million, about 2 months, a little over 2 months, which is our minimum best practice. How does that compare to other communities? Because it sounds good, but I don't know what other communities are putting in reserves. Is 2 months considered fiscally good?
Yeah, 2 months is considered best practice. Anything above 2 months is you know, recommended for cities who have special considerations. Like our whole city is on an island, so we're high hazard coastal city. So it makes sense for us to have a higher reserve target, which is why with the help of the commission a year ago, we were able to change it from 2 months to a 3-month reserve target. So over the last couple of years, we've been working to get closer to 3%. So right now, if we take the 5 from this year, 15 we're talking about next year for a total of 20, that would just eat into that extra month that we were working on. But we would still have 2 months of solid reserves there. And I think we've heard loud and clear from the commission that, hey, while we're trying to deal with this COVID impact, try to maximize your cost savings and be very limited in your use of reserve whenever possible, because we're all well aware that they're hard to build up, especially during difficult budget times, and that we need that flexibility for hurricane season and for anything else that can come up.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. But we have operated then for a while at the 2-month reserve. The commission has, or the city, I guess I should say, has operated at that amount for a while before we started building up again?
Yeah, I think we had that target for about 20 years until here recently. when we amended it to try to take it up to three months. So that's why I feel like we've operated for many years with that 2 month amount, that it's solid. It's the best practice. So, you know, I would only really be concerned if we got below it, and I would try to avoid that as much as possible.
Okay, that gives me some comfort, because that ties into my next question, which was, would this reduction in reserves impact our bond rating or any refinancing that we've been talking about doing in a negative way?
If we went below the two-month reserve, that they would definitely raise an eyebrow. That would catch someone's attention. Being above it is seen as a positive factor. So, you know, to the extent that we can, I'm always trying to get above two months and a lot closer to 3 months. So I think that's sort of where we're trying to operate is, you know, this is the rainy day. So I think it does make sense to use some, but I think it's great that we're having this discussion about what kind of those parameters look like. And I think what we're hearing is definitely stay north of that 2 month reserve. If we ever get in a position where we're talking about going below that amount, that we need to have a full blown discussion with the commission about it. And that we would do our best on the administration side to avoid even getting to that point.
Yes, agreed. Thank you.
You know, I was going to...
Yeah, Mayor, you're up.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the bond rating. So thank you for raising that issue, Commissioner. All I'm left with is thank you all for going to the 3 months, because frankly, if we hadn't made that move, John, a year or two ago as a goal, we probably wouldn't have this it's not really excess reserve. It's just more reserve than we typically would have at a time when we really need it. So my question was answered about the bond rating.
Yeah. And just to add a little to that, you know, when COVID, the impact hit, we have had our parking bonds reviewed, for example, by the rating agencies, and the fact that we were able to share with them budget balancing plans. We weren't talking about developing them. We already had them. We'd implemented them, and the commission had approved them. That really helped to maintain our credit ratings, because they were kind of looking to potentially downgrade not just us, but a whole lot of different issuers out there across the country. So I think the fact that our commission has supported us as we worked hard to create these plans and implement them, that's been great. And I think because if you think about it, we're impacted by COVID more than most communities, because we are so highly dependent on tourism and hospitality. So by being able to show them these plans that we really thought it through, that we're not going below a certain threshold, that kind of thing, that really speaks volumes to those credit rating agencies and really helps. So I appreciate all the commission support along those lines.
Thank you.
Commissioner Samulin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Then first, Commissioner Minor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I'm so happy you brought up that credit rating action, maintaining our ratings on parking. That is wonderful news, and real kudos to you and the rest of the administration that worked so hard to do that. That speaks volumes to the good efforts that you and the team have been making. I want to talk about a couple things. The first is our dependency on tourism. And we all know we're a tourist-based economy. We're in hospitality. Those are wonderful businesses. But just to see some of these numbers is really driving the point home about how dependent we are. And it's not just the resort tax, its impact on parking. I'm just wondering if you could sort of comment on that, because you know, we've had COVID-19, we had Zika, we've had, you know, Hurricane Irma. I'd love just to hear a little color from you, how you're thinking about, you know, sort of our tourism dependency.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, as I mentioned at the start of the discussion, we're kind of getting hit with the double whammy of the impact from COVID and the impact from lower property values. So ideally, as we look ahead, plan for the future, if there was anything we could do to diversify our revenue base, that would be, you know, a great idea. Same time, it's not an easy proposition, but I think it's the kind of thing that we probably should look at over the next 2 or 3 years. So, you know, what does that mean? So, for example, you know, we're talking about the marina development and potentially the city receiving, you know, a one-time amount of, let's say, $50, $55 million. That's great. Nothing wrong with it. In my mind, I'd like to think about how do we convert that into some kind of recurring funding stream for the future instead of just maybe a one-time pot of capital money or something like that. You know, for example, we, you know, when we moved the library from that's going to go into the 72nd Street complex, that's a prime piece of real estate. Do we really just sell it and get a one-time pickup, or should we own it and potentially be more of a landowner, you know, who's renting out or leasing facilities like that, not just to, you know, our cultural partners and nonprofits, but maybe to for-profit operations where we can, you know, just things like that. You know, we probably need to do a little bit more out of the box thinking about what's possible and what we could potentially do to, you know, using the resources we have and try to leverage those to produce, you know, recurring revenue streams. We've talked about the convention center, potentially naming rights there, you know, things of that nature. And I know that sometimes these, you know, we talk about these things and there's discomfort about around some of them, but I think it's probably well worth, you know, some fresh thoughts and about some of those kinds of options. Just as I think Commissioner Ariola mentioned, we're looking at probably minimum 2 years, probably more like 2 to 4 years worth of tight times and trying to position ourselves for the future on what are the kinds of things we can do as we have opportunities. So those are just some thoughts.
Commissioner, if I could supplement John's response a little bit. I think as we look at our two most probably volatile funding sources, which is resort tax and parking, we need to probably be more careful in terms of not making long-term recurring commitments with those dollars, because you know, all it takes is a hurricane, or even a near miss, and we have a negative impact after 9/11, a pandemic like COVID or even Zika. There's a lot of things that can happen, and yet sometimes we lock ourselves into long-term commitments with resort dollars, whether it be to the Bureau or whether it be to cultural organizations, and then we find ourselves having to, you know, not fund those groups. So, you know, we may need to think ourselves more about that. Maybe at least some portion of those volatile sources should either be only for one-time expenses, held for reserves, and not, you know, we have an opportunity now. We're going to be renegotiating the Bureau contract this fall. You know, how do we make sure that we don't lock ourselves into long-term commitments of volatile money? And it's really a part of resiliency. Part of our long-term resiliency financially is to make sure that we can weather these period of times where our most volatile revenue sources are in fact impacted without having to do severe cuts in service. The trolley was a perfect example. You know, 70% of the trolley was resort tax funded. It was obviously not a resilient type of funding in light of its volatility. And so we need to rethink how we fund the trolley, things like that.
Yes, thank you, Jimmy and John, for those thoughtful comments, which, you know, directionally I'm very supportive of. You know, my takeaways are that importantly, like you said, Mr. Manager, we better be careful about long-term commitments based on these type of revenues, which we're now seeing on a regular basis are taking these resiliency type shocks. John, I certainly agree with you on the need to look for recurring revenues. And I think every transaction that we're talking about, we should be using that lens, including the Byron Carlisle. And I am actually going to bring forward a discussion item for both the Finance Committee and the Budget Advisory Committee to really have a strategic, holistic look on tourism. That said, my second comment and final comment is around reserves. My short answer to your question about the splitting it is a qualified yes. I think that's a reasonable approach because we are keeping above the benchmark. I would just sort of underline the comments my colleagues made that we want to maximize savings, that we want to make sure that we have a clear outlook for, you know, sort of replenishing reserves. And we really should all be grateful that we were sitting with 3 months of reserves when we came into this. So I'd like to talk about how we eventually get back to that point. But thank you for your efforts.
Okay, Commissioner Minor.
And thank you, Commissioner Ariel, and thank you, John, for this presentation. So I have two questions. One is, have we done recently a real estate inventory of our city-owned property? And I guess what I'm thinking is whether we're utilizing those properties to maximum efficiency, getting market rates if we're renting them out, if we do that. And also whether there's opportunity to maybe, if there's properties that are not being utilized, to sell them. And I'm not advocating that we sell off properties to meet budget. That's not what I'm trying to do. But just saying, have we done that kind of analysis recently?
John, Commissioner, we have a full inventory of all, you know, the different types of real estate we have that are used in a commercial fashion, potentially, or usable. I would say that while in some cases, some of that real estate, we try to get, you know, commercial rates, you know, with some of our, for example, retail tenants. In other cases, we serve other goals. You know, in the South Shore Community Center, for example, we have a lot of nonprofits there that pay very little to the city, but we do that as a way to, you know, support those organizations. Or, you know, we have, we're looking now to Collins Park Garage, potential retail as an opportunity to try to promote cultural, you know, tenants and that kind of thing. So we're not always looking to maximize. You know, we have an incubator type facility across the street from City Hall in the old Oolite spaces, again, trying to create some interesting economic opportunity and high tech stuff. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, but we can certainly produce a list of all of our commercial retail space. Some of them, we've got some opportunities. Smith & Wolensky wants to potentially renegotiate a lease and maybe even go to referendum for a long-term commitment at a much higher rate because they have a very favorable old lease. So there are some opportunities to do that, but we can sort of, circulate a list. And in some cases, we try to maximize profit, like a Smith & Wolensky or some other places. And others, we use them for other purposes that are public benefit, but not necessarily a highest financial gain.
Good, thank you. And my second question relates to COVID-19, what kind of reimbursement are we expecting from the federal government, from FEMA, and is that sort of incorporated within this budget?
And John, you can address more clearly, but, you know, we're budgeting at this point, assuming as if we weren't getting a reimbursement, not because we don't think we will. Number one, it's probably more like 75% of what we spend. And number two, with FEMA, it can take, you know, 3 or 4 years. It's, you know, here we are in summer of 20. It's been 3 years since Irma. And while we've gotten back, I think, 2 million of the 11 million we're owed, you know, we're still out 9 million. And that's par for the course for a lot of the cities that were hit. So we envision getting that 9 million, which may help one day with replenishing some of our reserve. But we sort of don't count the FEMA money just because we're not sure when we're going to get it. So I think our mission, and John, correct me, is we want to present to you a balanced budget, balanced today, not, you know, on the come with FEMA money in a future day.
That's right. But just to give you an idea of how much we're talking about, to date, we've spent about $3.4 million that's potentially reimbursable. And to Jimmy's point, you know, if we got reimbursed at 75%, that'd be about $2.5 million.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Samuelin, you have your hand up. Is that a holdover? Commissioner Samuelin,
I'll take it down. Sorry, that was from before. I was bad.
No worries. And then Commissioner Mann is still up, and Jimmy, yours is up.
Yeah, I'm good.
Jimmy, you raised some really good points about, you know, sort of long-term commitments from the volatile revenue source of the resort taxes. To my earlier point, you know, I think it'll be beneficial for all of us to put everything on the table when you come back to us at our next meeting, including these items that you mentioned. For us to look at and consider. I mean, you know, we're in a tough spot. We're going to have to look at everything. I mean, decisions. So, okay, John.
Yeah, I think everything is needs to be on the table, Commissioner. You're exactly right. Now, we have some opportunities. Like I said, we've got some contracts that are coming due up that we can renegotiate that involve resort tax dollars. So I think there are some opportunities.
Also, Jimmy, and I hope you've been on, I'm sure there is all the revenue sources you mentioned too. Make sure that that's part of that next presentation, whether it's the name rights of the convention center under an Alton project and all these other things for renegotiation that drive revenue, so that we can also be looking at the revenue side and not just the cost side. Okay, John, the floor is.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're almost done here. So we'll try to wrap this up here real soon. Can you see my screen?
No.
No? Oh, jeez. Can you see it now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Okay, so it sounds like we have general support for potentially using about $15 million worth of the general fund reserve to address approximately half of that COVID-19 impact. And so with that in mind, we'll just keep moving forward. So again, when we come back to you about a month from now with a proposed balanced budget, we're going to have solutions that look a little different for the COVID-19 impact and for the non-COVID-19 impact, which is more of the permanent type right-sized cuts we need to make in order to fit our new revenue streams. Just a word on the millage rate. We always assume that we're not going to raise it, at least the operating portion. The debt service portion is tied to the GEO bond debt. So once we go out and sell those bonds, we're obligated to fund this. So it's not really optional. And so for several years, our residents are going to see a slight increase every year that's consistent with that GEO bond schedule. I will remind everyone that when we did issue the first tranche of bonds, that the interest rates came in better than what we originally anticipated. And that when we go do the second tranche, probably in about a year, year and a half, I'm anticipating that the interest rates will be very similar to where they are today, which is quite a bit less than when we were discussing this with the residents in 2018. So hopefully that's good news. So again, next steps, we're going to get together in a month and go through the how we balance the operating budget. That is going to be, a lot of information. It potentially, could be contentious, who knows. So I like Commissioner Ariola's idea of maybe having a physical meeting and just kind of being able to have more opportunity for real discussion. I think it might be helpful. Ideally, we'd be able to finalize the budgets, hopefully about a week later. This year has been a challenge in order to schedule a lot of these meetings, and we're having to do them virtually, and there's folks working from home. So, potentially, if we absolutely had to, we could meet in August, but we just want to be real sensitive that we try to set that aside for so the commissioners can travel, that kind of thing. So, if we need to, we will do it. And we also have a fourth meeting, July 28th, that we could camp on to if we had to. Then we have the two public hearings in September, and then we adopt the budget and start the new fiscal year. So I just wanted to look ahead to that. Okay, well, at this point, I think we're done with the operating discussion, unless anyone had some additional just thoughts before we transition over to the capital budget.
To your point, John, I raised the issue of, do we want to have an in-person meeting for this? I certainly would, and I'm comfortable doing it. And I'm sure
we can find a suitable location to observe social distancing and make people feel comfortable. Commissioner Gongora sounded comfortable with it. Rest of the folks feel just to give direction to staff so they can find a suitable location and start working the logistics. Commissioner Minor, you have your hand up, and then go.
Yes, I'm comfortable with that.
Mayor?
You know, what's going on is that the governor is trying to figure out about extending the, I don't know if he's done it yet, maybe Jimmy knows, an order on how we can have meetings, because we're only doing this by virtue of executive order. I think the League of Cities, or at least a group has suggested that he create a hybrid order so that you can have an in-person meeting and at the same time provide a sort of a remote option for people. My biggest concern, frankly, would be if we held a meeting where the only way somebody could participate would be to be in person, and if they didn't feel safe, that would obviously be important. So my hope is that if he gives that, and what are we talking about? What day are we talking about?
July 17th, so it's a month away.
I mean, I'd also like to see where we are. We're only seeing now what the reopening is doing, and it's been sort of up and down. Everybody saw this last spike that was enormous, but a lot of that was due. One of the problems with all the testing has been that all the private labs report their testing on one day sometimes, so we end up with a huge spike. The only problem with that one was that it had a high positive rate. They're also doing the contact tracing, so they're finding people with positives, and that may be part of it. So I'm not inalterably opposed yet, but I'd like to see what's happening at that time to see whether or not, because I don't want to create a scenario where people feel like they've got to come to a meeting, including staff, by the way, that they feel unsafe at. But I'm certainly not inalterably opposed at this point. Just like to get more information as we get closer.
Yeah. Well, I think regardless, Mayor, the hybrid model should be something we're pursuing for the foreseeable future, where those of us who go physically to meet would do so, but certainly public participation could still be done virtually, and we'd have to have some. That's why I wanted to give staff enough time to think about how you would do this, in case those of us on the commission who feel that an in-person meeting is just more productive, because these are tough issues, and it sometimes just helps to have people together. But I think a virtual meeting as a component of that would be essential for public participation, no doubt about it.
One of the challenges, Mr. Chairman, is, and I know, I think the manager's already thinking about this, is if we get the hybrid available to us, then the next question becomes, what about somebody who doesn't have a computer and wants to participate? And I think, Jimmy, I recall, was it you had one of these meetings where you indicated that we were thinking about maybe creating a rooms somewhere where people could go to if they wanted and things like that?
Mr. Mayor, that was in the context of a quasi-judicial hearing. Remember, this meeting that the Finance Committee would be doing on July 17th is a committee meeting open to the public. It's not a public hearing, and it's not a quasi-judicial proceeding. So, for example, the commission and staff could gather in, for example, the grand ballroom at the convention center, which and have a well-spaced group, and we could either broadcast the meeting so that folks could watch from home. But it's not a meeting that normally you have, any public presentations. There's no testimony. These meetings are probably the easiest to do because the public could watch from home. Doesn't have to be there. And normally there's not any really public, there's no public comment period. Like today, it's more you all hearing staff presentations, asking questions, and providing further directions. You could provide through a Zoom component if you wanted to get public comment. I think these meetings are a little different than the challenges posed by either our regular commission meetings where there are quasi-judicial items sometimes on the agenda, or the land use boards.
Well, I would almost say we would probably want a Zoom component, because I think especially if we're these presentations ought to be available to the public, although I think almost in our normal commission meetings, with or without Zoom, they are. I guess, Jim, you'll have to figure out how staff factors into that, because I don't know that you want to bring in 30 staff into a room and spread them out and have them. It may be easier. You actually may be able to use Zoom just for that part of it, and with us available to. So I would suggest let's let the, I don't think there's, well, I think we've got to come up with a plan and then decide whether at that moment it makes sense. But let's, I think Jimmy's been working. Let him come up with something and some options so that we can, and certainly in our June meeting, I'll put it on the agenda. So we can, maybe Jimmy, you can tell us what you think then, and we can talk about it for a few minutes at the in our next commission meeting. Does that work?
Yeah, that's fine. We can give you a couple of different options, but it could be workable in a way so that there could be the face-to-face among the commissioners who want to be there. We may have some commissioners who may not want to be there as well. So, but I think we can certainly create the venue and still have the public be able to see what's going on and hear the information that you're hearing.
And I mean, if we can meet in person and people are comfortable, we try to do it, and especially if we can solve for the technology. Folks who, you know, just feel more comfortable being at home and meeting on this in person, and, you know, let the team figure out whether the grand room at the convention center, the Fillmore, or even our chambers would be a suitable place, because at this point we got to get back to that standard, and, you know, start solving for that now. Okay, so hand up. Mayor Gelber, you have your hand up still? Okay, you're on mute. All right, John, floor's yours again. Can you hear me?
I'm gonna queue up the capital budget presentation. So just one sec, bear with me. Can you see the presentation? PJ, can you see it?
No, it's not on yet. There we go.
How about now?
Yes, we're ready to go.
Okay, great. Okay, so the capital presentation, we have some, probably about four natural stopping places. So as we move forward, I'll pause, and hopefully we can take any questions as we move along. One thing I'd like to remind everyone is that we have a five-year capital improvement program. We're really talking about funding only the 2021, which is the first year of that plan. If you see money programmed in a future year for a project, it's aspirational. It's what we'd like to be able to do. It doesn't mean that it's actually funded. So I just want to make that clear to folks as they potentially take a look at the document. Where we are in time, we're in this June, July timeframe. And so a lot of work has gone into this on the staff side to try and identify the highest needs. We have very limited funds, so it's very important that we communicate effectively to be able to make sure that with the limited funds we have, that we've been able to leverage those as much as possible. And over the last 2 or 3 years, we've been trying real hard to build resiliency throughout the capital program and just incorporate it as kind of how we do business. And so just a reminder that we've been working hard on that. We've modified all our forms. We've done training, that kind of thing. So yeah, part of that, you know, cross department teams planning for shocks and stresses. You know, this year we're getting a good double dose of shocks. So that's becoming more important than ever to be able to successfully do this. Establishing this kind of team, it was recommended by the ULI report in 2019. Okay, so before we jump into the 21 capital budget, just want to make a note that when we were doing the 2020 budget balancing plans, we included 35 projects getting deferred. And so at that time, all we did was slide up. We froze those projects and slid them out to October 1st, just to give us a more wiggle room in the 20 budget. So now that we're talking about the 21 budget, we've color-coded those projects in blue so that they're very clear. And some of them are getting funded again. Some of them are getting deferred another year. And some of them are just getting canceled. And so I'm going to try to highlight those as we go along so we can kind of keep track of them. But it is making this a little bit more complicated than normal. Okay, so as we approach capital funding for projects, we tend to have three main buckets that we're normally talking about. And then we have sort of the others. So the others include things like stormwater, parking, water and sewer, you know, projects that basically have a dedicated funding source. Capital renewal and replacement, resort tax quality of life, and capital PAYGO. This is where if someone says, hey, I want to refresh a playground in a certain park. Well, if that park is used primarily by tourists, then we can use quality of life funds. If it's not, then we probably have to use capital PAYGO. If a facility needs a new roof, we would try to fund that in the capital renewal replacement. If there's not enough money, we would use PAYGO. So what happens is PAYGO becomes kind of the source of last resort, if you will. And so it always feels like we're challenged to have enough funding here, which is a big reason why we went out and successfully advocated for the geobond program a couple of years ago. So that's helped, but we still could use more funding in this area. And I think the third presentation today that Ron Startman's going to give from the BAC will highlight some of that need. So you have several documents at your disposal. We have this attachment that we call the prioritization spreadsheet because it shows how much money is available by funding source, and then all the projects have been requested, and all the projects are being recommended in green. And we've highlighted, like I mentioned before, all the deferred projects in 2020 in blue font throughout all the documents. So that way, they're a little bit easier to follow. So the first big bucket that I want to talk about is capital renewal and replacement. So this funding source is for renewal and replacement of facilities and infrastructure. So we have very limited resources. There's a dedicated millage rate that's pretty small. It results in about $793,000 that it generates. Our unfunded requests are $4.3 million. So it's only funding, you know, less than 25% of what the need is. And so I just want to highlight that. And when we are going through these project requests, we try to do it as scientifically as possible using a facility condition index. Our property management team has worked really hard to be able to update all those indexes for all of our city facilities so that we know that we're funding the right projects first. So these are the seven recommended projects for this kind of funding. So like the bass window replacement, that is split funding. In other words, that means it has other funding as well. There is grant funding also. And so that's a key project we want to complete so we don't lose the grant. The fire station training tower is having all kinds of structural issues, so it's kind of a life safety issue. Fire Station 1, even though we're planning on moving it over to the new site at Fall Shore Community Center, the envelope of the building, the roof, needs some patching to make sure that we don't have intrusion and that it gets any worse than what it is. In Florida, HVAC and ACE equipment is key, so we have a couple of replacements we need to do there. And as well as we have old aging facilities that also need to be recertified. In order to pay for those projects, we had to unfund the project. So the 47, 40, 49, all the South Shore Community Center projects, these have been canceled because that facility, hopefully, it's going to be the new site of Fire Station 1. So we wouldn't want to put money into a facility that we're going to knock down. The pavement and sidewalk money, this is money that was funded prior to the GEO bond. And we just pushed this out a year. We know that with the GEO bond money that we have right now, that Public Works, it's pretty much a capacity in terms of what projects they can put into the ground. But I would like to see if we can try to fund this again in the following budget cycle, because I do feel that pavement and sidewalks, you know, are key. And I think, again, when Ron Stark gives his presentation, you're going to hear a little bit more about that. So we could pause right there if there's any questions about DRNR. Okay, let's just keep going. I think there'll be more questions when we get to quality of life and PAYGO.
Yeah, there are no hands up, John, so you're good.
Okay, great. So quality of life. So these funds are really a nice premium that we get here in Miami Beach. If you were in any other city in my job, you wouldn't have any of these funds available. So this is kind of a premium that we get to use for capital projects that are tourist related. And this really helps our residents get better facilities than they normally would. So, you know, in the last few years, we've moved a lot of this money into transportation to help run the trolley system. But we also have 10% that goes to each zone in the city, north, mid, and south. And so that's really what we're going to allocate here in the next few slides. And then also generate money for arts and culture for the CAC in order to support our cultural organizations. Okay, so first we're going to go over quality of life in North Beach. So in North Beach, all the projects that were deferred are in blue, so you can see them. And they were all funded again, except for 56, which is North Beach Yard, because that project is pretty much not moving forward at this point. And we needed to add more money to 57, which is the North Beach Oceanside Park. So we moved that money from 56 into 57. And we also moved 65, which was a related project for security cameras. We just consolidated it into the big project. So now in 57, we've been able to put together almost $1.5 million. As you know, North Oceanside Park is planned to be redone using the developer money that we received from that development on 82nd Street. And when the bids came in, it ended up coming in quite a bit higher than what the budget was. So our staff is working very hard to trim up that budget, but we want to add at least some quality of life funds there to help supplement that. So that's probably the biggest highlight here on this slide.
John, just to that point, do you know off the top of your head how much higher those bids came in? Because I don't know that I ever saw that number, but I heard that same comment from the team that the bids were a lot higher than our original cost estimate. Any sense of
I know it was several range. $1 million, so it was quite a bit higher. I'm not sure if we have one of our if David Martinez is on or one of our parks folks like John Rebar.
I see you, Mickey. The reason I raise that is, you know, that has been a project that, you know, has been lingering for a really, really long time, and we need to address it. So if we could sort of start identifying the funding gaps, so we can move forward on that. Mickey, you have your hand up.
Thank you. To that, you know, and maybe this is better directed to CIP, but with a lot of these recommended projects, since we did get bids that came over what we had originally estimated or intended them to be, is this not the time now, you know, with everything going on currently, to maybe have those discussions and renegotiate with bidders? Because right now, if we can't afford to move forward, this may be the perfect time to renegotiate. And it's a win-win because these contractors still get work and their employees still get work. May not be the same profit margin, but it's better than no profit, right? So maybe this is the time, David, that we, and I see you, David Martinez or Adrian Morales, whoever wants to answer it, but maybe this is the time that we can, you know, bring them to the table and say, look, this is a situation in which we were expecting a certain price point. Let's work together. Instead of going out and rebidding everything, if you have a winning bidder, maybe negotiate with them so that we don't delay the process, but we really aren't, that we're paying really the current market condition.
David, did you want to address that?
Yes, I had raised my hand. When we did, to start with your question, Commissioner, when the project was bid, we were looking at hopefully a construction budget in the neighborhood of, I'm going on memory here, maybe around 7 million, 7 and 8 million at most. The numbers came in, I believe, at north of $12 million. We met with several of the contractors, not all of the contractors bid the project, and even some that were contemplating bidding it and didn't. And the bottom line was, it's too risky. There were too much movement of trees, too many things. We were asking them to keep the park open in two phases and not close the park completely. So since then, John Rebar and our team and myself have been taking a real deep dive into the project and look at every single element. We have held the consultant accountable for bringing that budget down. So that is not costing us anything. So we're looking at bringing certain things down. There was a lot of nice to haves and some must haves. So we're working through that. We're down to a number of things that's getting more realistic. And John Rebar can jump in if he wishes. So now if we're able to get this additional almost $1.5 million to make up the 7 or so that we had before, I think we're at a good place. And we actually, as early as yesterday, staff met and going over a lot of these scope fine tuning. I don't even want to call it necessarily value engineering, but a lot of fine tuning of so many different elements that were being touched in that park.
David and John, I mean, this is budget season. So now is the time to address any gaps that, you know, we need to take care of, because that project has been lingering for a super long time. Obviously, many folks up there and citywide want to see it get going. David, assuming we can find the funds, is it shovel ready? I mean, is this something we could break ground on in 2020, 2021?
Commissioner, the answer is yes. The project today is fully designed and permitted from every agency. So the only caveat I would say to that is if one of the scope element changes to a significant way that requires some tweaking of the drawings, it may have to be put through a permitting agency to clean up. But the simple answer is yes, it's ready to go.
So in other words, the issue now is money, right? That's the last thing that we have to solve for is finding the money to finalize the project?
Yes.
Okay. So then colleagues, I for one would say this is probably a priority. We've been working on this for years and the community has been waiting. So, you know, during this budget cycle, let's figure this out, how much money we want to commit to this given the bids that we got and the plans that we got, so that, you know, by the time we close the budget in September, we can give Dave and his team the green light to move forward with the project. So I just raise that. If you all feel the same way, then we'll work hard to try to make this happen. Michael Gongora, your hand is up.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say I support getting this done. This has been promised for a long time, and we get a lot of inquiries all the time from residents about this project because it's long been promised. So yes, I support getting this one done.
John Rebar, did you want to say anything or no?
Good morning, sir. No, David covered it all.
Okay, great. John, you want to keep going?
Yes. Okay, let me share my screen again. Can you see my screen?
Yes, good job, John.
Thank you. All right, so then let's move from North Beach to Mid Beach. Okay, so here you see that all of the deferred projects were able to get funded again. One project I'd like to highlight is number 70, Indian Beach Park Playground Expansion. This project wasn't fully funded when we deferred it in 20, but so we went ahead and added the remaining amount that was needed in order to go ahead and get it fully funded. We know this is a party project in Mid Beach. Any comments about Mid Beach before we move on to South Beach? Okay. All right. So in South Beach, there's a little more action here. There's two slides worth. Most of the deferred projects from 20 have been funded again. The only one that wasn't was number 93, the Bass Museum Park Cafe Furniture and Equipment. And this one is just getting deferred a year. The Bass wasn't really ready to move forward. And then with all the social distancing issues and different things, just felt like something that would be better addressed a year from now. So we were able to do a few maintenance type projects, like at the Bass, you see the window replacement, condenser pumps, water pumps. 87 World War Memorial and 91, the Cuban Monument Restoration. Both of those monuments are at police headquarters. Since 2013, we've been able to restore all of the monuments in the city, except these two. So these are the last two, and because they're next to each other, it made sense to try to group, go ahead and knock them out this coming year. So that's in there. And a few other maintenance type projects. 106, you might recall that for the Super Bowl, we had some money set aside to spruce up Loomis Park. 106 is the same thing for the national championship. We have some money there for Loomis and for South Point to get them in great shape so that hopefully they'll be highlighted on TV. And we still have $190,000 unallocated there for anything that comes up throughout the year. Any question on South Beach? Okay, so then we'll move on.
I don't see any hands up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I said, I don't see any hands up, you're good.
Okay, great. Okay, so moving on to PAYGO. So PAYGO, again, is kind of like the funder of last resort. So we tend to have a lot more needs than what we actually can fund. PAYGO has been converted into a millage rate a year or two ago. So that way, as values grow, hopefully that funding source can grow along with it. You can see that millage generates $2.5 million, but that the unfunded request totaled $13.2 million. So, you know, this is a point that I think in Ron Starkman's presentation, he's going to hit hard that, you know, at some point in time, if we can try to, build up this PAYGO amount, I think it would really help us a lot. Right now, because of the GEO bond, we've been able to address a lot of the most critical needs, but we need to hopefully at some point when we get, into the future, we wouldn't need to do a GEO bond to do a lot of the maintenance type projects that we currently did have to do, things like roads and streets and that kind of thing. Okay, so let's get into the list. So one of the first projects we have on here is security enhancements and also just, health type, COVID related type enhancements that we need to make. Things like, being able to open a door without turning a doorknob, being able to wash your hands at the sink, maybe handless, you're not touching something. There's a lot of needs there. And if we have questions, Adrian Morales can address those. We also have three projects for the fleet facility, 111, 112, and 116. That developed, we were hoping to be able to potentially leverage a new facility out of a potential development there in Terminal Island, but it looks like that's probably not going to work out. And so these much needed maintenance projects need to be done. So you see them in there. You see 133, we moved out the Collins Park Rotunda amount of 175 to one more year. We pushed it out. There is also CAC funding of $875,000 in addition to that. We talked to them and they felt that they were okay deferring it a year, given that it's a small facility. It certainly doesn't lend itself to social distancing. And so it made sense to defer it to be able to do some other things. 141 Brittany Bay Park. This was the
Hey, John, I apologize for the interruption, but I see Commissioner Gongora and Commissioner Steinberg have their hands up in that order.
Okay.
Real brief, not specifically geared to this project, but when I saw that number of unfunded projects at $13.2 million, and I know there's so many for each of the funds, I'm looking at the electronic notice for today's meeting. On the print version, did you give us that whole list of all the unfunded projects? Because sometimes I like to look through that before my final vote to make sure there's not something I think is critical that's not being funded.
Yeah, that's a good point. The reason why we have that attachment, that document, that it looks like a big spreadsheet, and mm-hmm. it does include all the project requests by funding source, and it shows what we're recommending to be funded. You'll see which projects have been deferred into, you know, the following year, for example. So I do recommend that before we finalize the capital budget in the third budget workshop, that everybody kind of browse that and just see if there's any high priority projects that potentially didn't get recommended for funding, because we could certainly, if we're made aware of what those are, ideally sooner than later, again,
yeah,
we could take a look and see if we could accommodate, because some of these projects, especially if they're smaller, there might be some unallocated funds that we could use. Also, you know, if it's a higher priority, then maybe something else that did get funded, we could potentially make a change
and review that
at a future meeting.
Yeah, I'll review that. And if there is something that I think is critical, I'll set up a meeting with you before the next budget meeting. Thank you.
That would be ideal. So that way at the next budget meeting, we could, you know, reflect all the changes that were requested. And then we could, recommend how potentially to accommodate them.
Commissioner Steinberg, you have your hand up.
Thank you. Michael, thank you for touching on that. I was going to also at some point. John, with the slide with the recommended projects, the security enhancements citywide, you touched upon the fact that those are also, I guess, COVID related to ensure public health and safety for, not touching door handles or having it done. Maybe Adrian Morales can touch on that, because would that then be eligible for those CARES Act dollars, which are true dollars for, you know, we wouldn't otherwise be doing this but for the pandemic. And so I'd like someone to please answer that, because as you touched on before, PAYGO dollars are very important. And so maybe Adrian or Jimmy could touch on that.
Yeah, if it is in response to COVID and it was not already part of our budget, then it could meet the criteria for CARES Act dollars that the county is now soliciting proposals for. I know Marsha is working on that and gathering information from different sources, including Adrian. So those are items that she has not already included. I think we've already are totaling over $3 million worth of items that we were thinking of submitting for that. And I don't know if she's on the call, but I'll make sure she looks at those items as possibly being included.
That is correct, Mr. Manager. We're working with staff to make sure that we have all of the tools that we need for our facilities, the doors, the faucets, and creating the no-touch environment, and anything that we use as part of the COVID response would be submitted to emergency management and Marsha's office to ensure that we get reimbursed for it.
Okay. Any other questions before we keep moving?
I don't see any hands up, John. The floor is yours.
Okay. Can you see my screen, PJ?
Yes.
Great. Okay, staying in PAYGO, we were able to fully fund Brittany Bay Park project, so now that can move forward. We also included the Polo Park lighting and soccer field project that had been deferred as part of 2020 since we couldn't really do the work over the summer anyway. So that's fully funded. And the City Hall generator project, that's something that's a critical need. $600,000, that's not easy to fund. So that's why we had to defer a few of these other projects to help make that one happen. But that one's pretty key. And then finally, we had a few other deferrals here. You can see them that helped us fund the projects that, you know, that you saw before, like the security enhancements and the City Hall generator. And Belle Isle Park, I think that was discussed at a recent commission meeting. So that one's in there as well. Any other questions about PAYGO before we move on to kind of the other part of the capital budget?
There are no hands up.
Great. Okay, well, we got through the harder part of this exercise because it is a prioritization of a lot of projects requests into limited capital dollars. So as we move forward in the presentation, we're really getting more into the funds that have dedicated dollars for their capital projects, such as transportation, parking, stormwater, water, sewer, those kind of projects. So in transportation, we got several projects that help, you know, with bike lanes, the city more pedestrian and bike friendly. We have swapped some funding and 201 and 209. As we've talked about, the transportation fund that gets a lot of resort tax money for the trolley is real tight. So instead of funding 201 and 209 from that fund, we've switched them over to these other funds, concurrency mitigation and the PTP half cent transportation surtax. A 199, the Pine Tree Drive and roundabout, that's the city's contribution, working with the county's $500,000 there. So those are the highlights. Any questions about these before we move on to parking?
No hands up, John.
Great, thank you. Okay, so in parking, you might recall that during the budget balancing plans that we did in the current budget year, they went through and identified a few capital projects that they basically unfunded to help create some additional cash in the parking fund to help deal with the impact of COVID-19. So since that time, they went through and comprehensively looked at their entire portfolio of capital projects. They worked closely with property management to look at life safety issues and their highest priorities. And as well, they had some 2010 parking bonds that we wanted to try to prioritize spending because it has been 10 years. And we'd like to get that money spent and off the books if possible. So there's quite a few projects. I'm not sure there's any worth highlighting, but you can see that overall they're only funding $920,000 worth of projects, which for a system the size of ours, that's you know, pretty limited. But what they did is they basically found other projects that weren't as high a priority in order to fund those, since they do have pretty limited funds. Any question about parking?
Anyone? Yep, no hands.
Okay, so moving on to stormwater. So the list for stormwater is pretty short this year, mainly because we're waiting on the policy decisions related to the adoption and implementation of the Jacobs Engineering Study. So once we have that direction and we know which projects are getting resequenced, we will move around quite a bit of the stormwater projects that are currently in the capital budget to match that. So the main new projects or differences is West Avenue has an additional $9 million that's been added as a result of that scope change from Durham's request for additional water quality. I think that recently went to commission. And the citywide seawall rehab, we're in the process of evaluating the city seawalls or all the seawalls in the city And once we have that inventory, I think we're going to find some hot spots. So so Public Works thought it'd be prudent if we could put together kind of a pot of money to try and address that once we had the results of that assessment. So that's the stormwater picture at this point. Any questions on that before we move to water and sewer?
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yeah, please.
Yes, thank you. John, two questions. First, that 226 of the city seawalls is obviously a critical priority. And I know we've been tracking about doing an inventory around that, so I'm familiar with that exercise. What is the latest estimate of when that analysis will be done so that we can actually begin planning for some of the implementation on our citywide seawalls?
I know we've kind of run into some delay in that, you know, the person spearheading the project ended up having like a rough traffic accident. So they've been kind of out of pocket for a while. But I think we're trying to get back on track. I think Roy Coley might be able to add something to that discussion in terms of timing.
Yes, Commissioner. The individual that John spoke of was badly injured and has been out of work for a few months that was running that project. And he says he is able to return to work and restart that project in July. And we believe that it would be cost effective to wait on him and allow him to finish it versus having to outsource that at a much greater expense.
Thank you for that. And obviously our hearts and thoughts are with our employee and hope this individual has a very speedy recovery. My second question relates to a project on First Street south of Fifth. That is a project that was unanimously approved by the Land Use Committee. There is strong community interest in that. And I think that's something we'd like to see sooner rather than later. I didn't see it on the list. And I just want to be clear that we have the funding to take the next steps and to fund that project.
But Commissioner, I believe that's fully funded, but I don't know if John or Roy want to, or David want to weigh in. I believe that project is funded.
Yeah, we had that funding programmed in our 2017 bond proceeds. And so it is my belief that that money is sitting aside and being held for that project. I may have to ask for John's team to confirm those exact details, but I think that money is there.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well, but we'll double check here. For the next, as we get to the next budget workshop. But yes, that's a good point, Commissioner Samuelin, in that when we're going through this presentation, it's really just showing new money that's being added to the capital mm-hmm. budget. It's mm-hmm. not showing, quite dozens of projects that have already been funded that are in some level of implementation.
That's great. Thank you for those responses. I appreciate the follow-up.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move over to water and sewer. PJ, can you see my screen?
Yes, copy.
All right. Okay, so water and sewer, you'll see two slides worth of projects. Not sure any of them individually are worth highlighting, but in summary, what we're really trying to do here in the 21 capital budget is start adding funds for those critical needs. I think it's $122 million worth of projects over the next 5 years in the Hazen and Sawyer study. These are the projects that are more unrelated to the stormwater projects. As you know, when we do some stormwater projects where it makes sense, we also do the water and sewer portion of the project at the same time. So there are projects, water and sewer projects in the capital budget that are dependent on the policy decisions that come out of the Jacobs Engineering Study. So when that happens, we will resequence them similar to stormwater. But most of the projects you see here are really related to those critical needs from the Hazen and Sawyer Study. Any questions before we move on?
Commissioner, I'm sorry, Vice Mayor Steinberg has her hand up and Commissioner Gongora after.
Thank you. No, just when you're talking about how a lot of it is waiting on the Jacob study. I just want you to know that I have added an item to the 24th, which is next Wednesday, to discuss, you know, and get an update from administration on the Jacob study and the sequencing and so forth. So hopefully that will help inform what we do.
Thank you. And I think that item may be helpful to my question. I believe we need this money. My real question is, it's $30 million and it's really vague in what the money is being spent on. So I would just like to dig into this a little bit more and understand what we mean by these kind of generic headlines that add up to $30 million before we approve it. I believe we're going to need it, but just so that I feel comfortable, I want to know more specifics about what it's for.
Yeah, I believe Roy has the Hazen and Sawyer study that has a lot of the detail that supports these amounts. And I think that's readily available, right, Roy, that we can share that with the commissioner?
Yes, and it's also the same information that we shared at the resiliency retreat where we showed our water and sewer needs, but certainly the details of each one of those numbers is available.
Thank you.
Great. Why don't we circulate those, Roy?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're almost done here. So we'll move on to the other, which is just the remaining miscellaneous funds. We have our usual CDBG type projects that help keep up with maintenance in our residential housing portfolio. Most of these are life safety issues as we try to be proactive and make sure we don't run into any issues. 224, that's an environmental project that used to be a former SASH site after Hurricane Andrew, and is currently going through the closeout process, and we're actually saving $576,000 of what was originally estimated. So that's good news to the sanitation fund. You see our fleet vehicle replacement capital amount here, $10.6 million. That's the going in amount. We're still scrubbing that to try to make sure we're properly prioritizing, given that we're in a tight budget year. I will say that we're prioritizing transitioning our police cruisers to hybrids. Those vehicles use a lot of fuel. So by being able to continue to stay on track in terms of swapping those out with hybrids, transitioning, that should result in, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings in fuel over the next few years. And so most of those vehicles there you see in that $10.6 million are really in public safety, but we are going to scrub that. The last project, fiber communications, this has to do with the intelligent transportation system project and laying fiber going to and on Alton Road. Anytime we can lay our own fiber and not have to pay somebody like AT&T for a monthly service to use theirs, it results in a long-term savings on the operating side of the budget, and that $131,000 spend will probably pay for itself within 3 years. So that's pretty much all the projects. I just want to make a note on how the GEO bond projects are being reflected in the capital budget, because we do go out 5 years. I just want to make the point that the tranche one projects are already appropriated. Their dollars would be in what's called the prior year column because they were funded in 2019. Tranche two, you know, as originally planned, was going to be in 2022. So you'll see all the projects and dollars now in that column. Same for tranche three, planned for 2025. And tranche four is currently shown in future. We're probably about a year and a half away from, assessing tranche two and what that could look like. Just based on the interest rates we're seeing and some of the needs that have come up, we definitely would have an opportunity to potentially do, you know, a larger bond issue than maybe we originally planned. Maybe we would only do three tranches, for example, instead of four. But all of that is more TBD, probably, you know, a discussion we would be having this time next year. And again, timing-wise, next meeting is mostly about the operating budget, but any of the potential changes or tweaks to the capital budget, we could address those as well. So it would be very helpful if commissioners could share any additional projects or changes that they're aware of that did not get recommended. You could pass those on to me. That would be great. rate. And the rest of this timeline we already talked about when we did the operating budget presentation. So at this point, just any additional questions regarding the capital budget before we move on to the third item? Okay, I guess we can, if that's, if no questions, then I believe we could transition over to item three. Is that okay with everyone?
Yeah, I don't see any hands up, John.
Okay, great. So item three is a presentation by our Budget Advisory Committee Chair, Ron Starkman. And there was a referral. Here, one sec, let me transition my documents here. There was a referral to the Finance Committee and the Budget Advisory Committee at the July 31st, 2019 City Commission meeting by Commissioner Samulin. And the purpose of that referral was to identify ways to address the challenge of adequately funding for ongoing capital renewal replacement of city assets, such as streets, sidewalks, buildings, facilities, et cetera. So he's gonna give the presentation and I'm gonna do my best to click. So I just need a second here to pull up the presentation and get ready. So while I'm doing that, Ron, if you want to provide any introductory comments or anything, or Commissioner Samulin as well,
yes, that would be great. Mr. Chair, if I may, thank you, John. And you've done a wonderful job at sort of teeing up this issue. In brief, the challenge we have seen is that there's some basic capital needs that residents in the community look for, streets and sidewalks. And in now my third budget time, it became apparent that we were doing a pretty fine job at keeping our operating budget. We could always do better, but we sort of were making things add up. But in the capital area, there were needs. In fact, one of the reasons I advocated so strongly for the GEO bond is because it became apparent there really wasn't a great plan B. But I think John gave some very good specifics, $13.2 million unfunded, 25% of the needs in capital replacement and renewal. And I thought it was time to take a holistic view of this issue. Thankfully, Ron Starkman and the BAC have done a fine job to put it together. And I think this is useful awareness and education for all of us of a challenge we have to address. I look forward to Ron's comments.
John, can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Great. John, just leave the cover page there, because I do have just a couple of introductory comments. And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly since I've already met with many of you. And I want to spend most of the time on the results and conclusions and recommendations rather than a lot of background. For a number of years now, during the budget process, the Budget Advisory Committee has taken the position that the city was not setting aside sufficient money in PAYGO for the renewal and replacement of the city's long-term assets. Until recently, however, we didn't have comprehensive information on the condition and useful life of the city's capital assets, which was needed to determine an annual amount that should be set aside from recurring revenue to maintain those assets. At the urging of the Budget Advisory Committee, the city administration in the past couple of years has hired consultants to provide that missing information through a process much like what is done to prepare reserve studies for condominiums. And this presentation pulls the results of that work together to provide a recommendation for future PAYGO funding amounts. So next slide, John. So the capital assets we're talking about include 100 municipal facilities totaling 5 million square feet, including building structures, roofs, air conditioning, plumbing, electrical, with a value of approximately $1.1 billion. Also, $139 million in roadways and $25 million in sidewalks. Next. AECOM was brought in to do the assessment of the $1.1 billion in municipal facilities. And while we're still fine-tuning some of the findings, we estimate that approximately $12 million a year needs to be provided in order to maintain the assets in satisfactory condition. Next. Another category, the other category you saw was roads and sidewalks. And this is the results from the community survey, which shows that the condition of roads is number four on their list of priorities, just below police and clean streets. So this is something that citizens clearly care about. Also, sidewalks is high on this list. And we think that part of the reason this shows up so high is because for a number of years, the streets were deteriorating. And it's only been recently with the geobond funding become available that we started to work on some of the worst streets. Next. This chart is just to illustrate the point that streets can be kept in good condition for about 10 years with just basic maintenance. But after that, they start to deteriorate significantly. If you do repaving and remilling within the 10 years, the cost is relatively reasonable. But if you wait to allow the streets to continue to deteriorate, then you may have to do work on the roadbeds and the cost becomes significantly higher. So it's very important that we stay on top of this, the maintenance of the streets. Next. The study that was done on the condition of the streets was completed in 2017. And at that time, they found that the average condition was a 72.4 out of 100. That's kind of satisfactory. But they also determined that in order to maintain that level of service, that we should be spending approximately $6.8 million a year. Now, that number has been revised down to $3 million as a result of the geobond, which included $30 million for repairs of the streets. Next. The sidewalk is a similar survey, was a similar story. Before the geobond, they were estimated that approximately $2 million was needed to maintain the sidewalks. Now that number is $500,000 since the geobond included $13 million for sidewalk repairs. Next. This just talks about sidewalk condition. I think we can skip this. So, in summary, if you look at the pre-geobond, the amount that the various studies determined we should be setting aside from recurring revenue every year was a total of $21.3 million. Now, with geobond, a number of these areas have been addressed, and we have some newer facilities, some old facilities that are going to be significantly repaired, and we also have some new facilities. So, actually, it's kind of a trade-off. You have some work that doesn't need to be done, but we also have now new facilities that are going to require ongoing maintenance. But the total has dropped from 21 to 15.5. Next. Okay. This is really a very important chart. Just to briefly explain what it shows is the blue bar is the amount funded from PAYGO. The green bar is from that dedicated millage for repair and replacement. And the red bar is the amount that was unfunded relative to the target that was determined by the various studies. So the trend here is quite disturbing. If you look at going back to 2007, 2008, the city wasn't doing that bad a job. It was, you can see that the total amount of funding for capital was $11 million approximately, with a significant portion coming from PAYGO. The same thing in 2008. Then starting in 2009, it drops. In 2010, it drops precipitously. And that's because, you know, of course, in 2010, we had the financial crisis. The issue here, though, is that even though the city's financial picture improved significantly in the subsequent years, we didn't really increase the amount of funding for capital assets. So you can see there's been a significant gap now for a number of years. Go to the next chart. Okay, this takes the red area and just shows it on a cumulative basis from 2007 to 2020, providing a sort of a total gap of between what was being funded and what would have been appropriate to fund to maintain assets. And that's a total of $154 million. Now you see that the GEO bond included $67 million of maintenance types projects. So that cut that dug us out of the hole in a significant way, at least got us halfway out of the hole. But arguably, we shouldn't be using general obligation bonds to maintain existing facilities and roads. It would be appropriate, certainly, if we were putting in new roads, but to actually pave and maintain roads, that should be handled out of recurring sources of revenue. The same thing for basic building infrastructure like air conditioning, roofs, electrical, and so forth. But we did have $67 million in there for that because we really had some desperate needs. Now, what's left over is still a significant gap of $87 million because there are still a lot more needs. We have a fleet maintenance facility out on Terminal Island that's in really bad shape. We have a number of other areas where, as you heard from John, where things, if we were handling them in normal course, we would be taken care of. John, next page. So just to summarize where we are in terms of our sources of funds, we have the renewal and replacement millage, which generates $769,000. We have what we have been funding, what we do have funded for PAYGO of $2.5 million for a total of $3.3. That's against a recommended need of $15.5 million. So we have a gap in the coming year of over $12 million. Next. Okay. So we really have, the city's really limited in the number of options it has to try to close this gap. Number one in terms of recurring is the committee believes that the city should start its budget by putting in the amount that is needed for these capital assets, and then look at the remaining amount of money that would be available for funding programs and services, rather than deferring maintenance year after year in order to provide the level of programs and services that it might, that it might want. Another alternative, clearly we've tried to avoid it, is the millage rate increase. Part of this problem is due to the fact that the millage rate actually was reduced at the same time as the funding for capital projects was not increased or being cut as the economy improved. The answer here is going to have to be that we try to move in the right direction and that we do this incrementally over time. We have some other recurring sources potentially coming up, like convention center naming rights, the convention center hotel revenue, and there's going to be some money coming after the sunset of the city center RDA. Also, another recommendation of the committee is to establish what we call it an asset preservation fund from development agreements. And the marina project is actually 300 Alton is a perfect example of how this could be done, where there the city is the air rights are going to be potentially purchased from the city. There'll be other capital funds provided, and we would encourage the city to use that to maintain its existing assets rather than embark on new projects. That's John. If you go forward, I think what do we have? Just next slide. Okay, this again illustrates how during this period we've been reducing millage rates. Next. We're kind of in the middle of the pack in terms of where we stand with our millage rates. Next. And we have this issue of there's in the foreseeable future, it doesn't appear that there's going to be sufficient additional revenues from the traditional sources and property taxes and so forth. So the gap has to be closed in some other way. So that was it for my prepared comments, and happy to take any questions.
I don't see any hands up yet. Ron, thank you for that presentation. I think you and I have discussed this a couple of times in the past. It's a real issue, folks. You know, repair and replacement is an issue in our public infrastructure, just the same way in our personal homes. You know, having reserves for things like replacing roofs and driveways and things are necessary. And, you know, we don't have sufficient repair and replacement funds set aside to deal with this. And, you know, the GEO bond gave us a rare opportunity to do some catch-up work, but this is going to be an ongoing issue as we go forward. You know, a lot of other, and maybe John or Jimmy can chime in now, you know, a lot of other municipalities have dedicated funding sources in their millage rate to deal with this. And we do not, as I understand it, many years ago, we sunsetted that, commissioner, to vote for having a small millage rate increase to deal with this, and that did not pass. My personal feeling is we just kicked the can down the road to a future commission, complaints from residents about cracked sidewalks and streets and that they propose, because we simply don't have the money to deal with it. And so, you know, Ron, you proposed some solutions here, but I'd love to hear your thoughts in from your budget committee meeting about, you know, having a millage rate set aside just for repair and replacement.
Yeah, now that would be, I think, the preferred approach. Back in the last time this issue was discussed seriously was back in 2005. I saw from the memo from the city manager, and at that time they decided to create that replacement and renewal dedicated millage amount, but it's just a fraction of really what is needed. And it was shortly after that that they actually started reducing the amounts of this funding from PAYGO and so forth. So I think that would be the preferred way to go, because there's no question that we're going to need to continue to repave roads, fix sidewalks, maintain buildings, and if it's not a dedicated source, then there's a lot of pressure on the commission to provide services and other services and so forth. And as you said, Ricky, kick the can down the road.
Colleagues, I don't see any hands up. You know, this is something all right, Commissioner Samuel, your hand is up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ron and the BAC, for a wonderful fact-based presentation. That was extremely, extremely helpful. You know, we clearly have a sizable issue on our hand. I agree with Commissioner Arriola that, you know, this warrants real attention. You know, one thing I will comment, when I initially put this item forward, it was pre-COVID-19. So, you know, obviously the world has changed a bit on us here, and that probably makes our task a bit harder. If I have just two, you know, sort of macro level comments, it would be, first, this certainly gives me pause for any new commitments we're making to that are going to require greater upkeep. I think we need to be a lot more careful and recognize that asset enhancements we're pursuing are causing incremental cost, which we now understand we have not fully funded. The second thing I would say of the list of recommendations that sort of jumps to me a bit is dedicating new revenues. When we have opportunities like the convention center, when we have opportunities like the marina project, you know, one thing we could do from a policy standpoint is say, we're going to take a certain slice, not the whole pie, but a certain percentage, and dedicate them to this need, which we clearly have. So I just thank the committee for their work. And this is obviously something that, you know, we need to give, you know, considerable thought to.
Okay. You know, one thing to, you know, think about, folks, you know, one of the reasons I was so bullish and excited about immunity, you know, not just for quality of life issues and to, you know, beautify our city and, you know, issues regarding resilience, but an investment to maintain and hopefully increase pretty big value. So as we struggle to deal with the upcoming budget we're going to have in future years, and we're trying to solve for, you know, wire packed sidewalks and streets that haven't been repaired, et cetera, due to property values. Same with the resiliency program. We are in a pause. And so to the extent that the market is concerned, and that being reflected in property values, you know, we should start thinking about, you know, what kind of more budget crisis like the one we're facing now will result in decreased services. And some of those might be keep our budgets growing, or we're going to have to make some painful decisions. You know, when we kick the can down, we're going to start reflecting in how people feel about remaining in the city and buying homes here.
Mr. Chair, if I could, one comment, observation I would make is, and I can only speak probably in full detail with the 7 years I've been here, but my guess as it precedes me is over the last 10 years or so, this city has invested in a lot of new infrastructure. And the number of new parks or new park facilities or obviously underground infrastructure now, but new resources, obviously a convention center, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, one of the things we may want to, maybe Ron's got a thought on, as we're looking at, you know, a capital budget and new projects that come down the pipe, you know, should there be some sort of ratio we come up with that each year, X percent of the budget of that capital budget should be put aside into some sort of fund, rather than maybe all of it spent, you know, there is a tendency, and I think all government, if we've got 100,000 sitting there, let's put in a new bathroom here or whatever. Should we maybe as a practice and a discipline set aside that money, put some sort of almost like, endowment, a university for these assets from some of those capital dollars. So rather than we keep creating more and more infrastructure that needs maintenance. And that's a good thing, but maybe some of those dollars should go into some sort of endowment to support that as part of that. And I don't know, Ron, your thoughts on that, but because I can point to so many new assets, you know, new bathrooms, new facilities at Musk Park, Altos del Mar, all kinds of new stuff, which is great, but you're right. It then adds, it just increases the annual maintenance bill, and maybe some of those dollars can go in that direction.
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. So, you know, I think rather than taking money from capital.
All right. Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. I think the emphasis should really be on setting aside money from recurring sources. When you build a project, I mean, normally the capital dollars there are for the construction of the project. You could, in theory, set aside some portion of the construction money for future maintenance. Though that would only last so long, and it doesn't. I think the bigger problem is the what we've already built, and while this might help in some cases, partly, I think the emphasis should be looking at the fact that this is a recurring need, just like your reserve payment coming in a condo has to be every year. And some years you spend a little more than the amount you set aside in reserve, some years you spend a little less. But overall, it's an amount that you know you need to spend over a fairly long period of time, and you try to smooth it out. And I don't know about, you know, and I think the recurring sources is really the best way to do that.
Mayor Gelber, you have your hand up.
Yeah, yes, it's an interesting discussion, and I appreciate Ron bringing it and staying on it. It's not the first time we've talked to you about it. And I think Commissioner Sandlin raised a good point that it would be nice to be having this discussion without, you know, COVID here and its economic issues. But in some ways, it makes the point. You know, one of the things we can do is we tend to, when we go through these budget exercises and the experience I've had, and I've seen the city do it before, is we tend to be pretty fiscally conservative in a sense that we don't like to, if we give ourselves a haircut, if we make savings, we tend to err a little bit on the side of let's make sure we don't end up spending more than we have. Last year, I think we had something like $15 million at the end of the year, which was a pretty sizable amount. Of course, we plotted into reserves, which we're now finding very useful. But it does occur to me that with some regularity, we end up erring on the side, not erring, frankly. I think, John, I think it's smart for you to lead us in a direction that makes sure we're not overspending. But sometimes at the end of each year, we do have extra money, and that would certainly be a good place to put it if we could build up some kind of reserve for just that those kinds of operational commitments.
Yeah, just to build on that, I think as we were trying to add to the reserve to get to that new three-month goal, you know, that was the strategy. Once we reached that three-month goal, for example, though, then we would have much more flexibility to take some of those savings that we have, hopefully every year, at least some amount, and then potentially set some of that aside into, you know, to add to these capital type funding. Any other thoughts on this item before we move on to item 4 on the agenda?
No hands have been raised.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. And we'll see you at the next BAC meeting. Okay, so the final item is a potential tweak to the capital budget. We've tried to schedule any requests that didn't go through the normal budget process just due to timing. I think this one was a recent item that had hit the commission agenda as a referral. So discuss funding artistic painting of the Mid-Beach water tanks. And so I think we have Heather Shaw, who can just do a quick introduction, and we can hopefully get some direction if this is an item that the commission may want to try to add to the capital budget.
Yeah, let me tee it up because it's mine, and I'd love to hear from my colleagues. I think particularly Vice Mayor Steinberg and Mayor Gelber, who and even Jimmy, who attended Miami Beach High. And if I left somebody out, I apologize. I put this on, you know, several months back before COVID and the budget crunch, but you know I was walking in the area many months back, and I noticed that these water towers that we have, you know, they're quite ugly, and they face our high school. And so I was thinking about the high school students that got to look at these things every day, as well as the single family neighborhood in the area that have to look at this. And I said, you know, a nice artistic touch to it would beautify the area for not a lot of money. And, you know, these things are done, you know, nationwide. And we recently did it up in North Beach with the water towers up there, and it came out really nice. It's not a lot of money, but you know, I really felt for our students that have to like look at this every single day. And I'm just wondering why this hasn't been done before, and would love Mayor Gelber, Vice Mayor Steinberg's feelings on this, because you all went to Beach High, and I think it would be cool if we did either something inspirational or just beautiful so that the kids have something nice to look at instead of that ugly sort of grayish green color.
It's a good idea. By the way, it makes me yesterday, for those of you who saw online, and some of you might have been on Lincoln Road, or we had our graduation for Beach High. And I want to just thank the parents, the faculty, administrators, the fire and police departments who did a drive-through in the pull-up at Beach High, and then Lincoln Road, all of the Lincoln Road bid, who then did an event on Lincoln Road for them. Wasn't what they expected. Obviously, months ago, they thought they'd have that wonderful ceremony that we have every year, but it was still had incredible energy, and the kids were excited, enthusiastic, and you could see in many ways it was better because it was really organic and homegrown from the faculty, administrators, and the students and the community. So I think it's a good idea. Beach High also, I think we should talk to the PTA. They have a project also inside that they're very interested in. What's the cost of this? Do we know?
The cost for the North Beach Towers was about $50,000.
Yeah. And we would do a call to artists, let them come back with ideas, you know, and then we can cost the thing out. But Heather, I think you have something to present. I'm not sure, but at a minimum, we can at least do a call artist and get some ideas and see if there's something we like. And then we can find a corporate donor to pay for it or something. But if there's an appetite to see those towers painted, then, you know, at least we can get the ball rolling.
I think it's a good idea. And those are ugly towers.
Heather, did you have something to present or no?
No. I was just going to present what we did for the North Beach Tower, water tower tanks rather. And it was 50,000. It took about 7 months. We have to go through the art and public places process to do the call of the artists. And so if we want to do something similar, that was just the process that we go through and the cost for the last towers.
Okay. Colleagues, you want to give staff direction to do a call for artists and see what they come back? I mean, this may actually just roll into next year's budget, but at a minimum, just get the ball rolling.
So,
Vice Mayor Steinberg?
Yeah,
Commissioner Gongora.
So, first of all, the Beach High I went to, I think, is a very different Beach High than Dan went to. Were you guys high tides or typhoons? I can't recall.
Now you're getting it. Okay, now you're getting insulting.
Thank you for that. Let me just pull that.
Are we going to start making AIDS jokes? I love it. Let's go for it.
Is there a way, you know how we did the design for the storefronts with student artists who presented ideas? Is there a way we can tap into the Beach High talent? We have some talented students that go there, artists that go there. Maybe it'd be nice. You could do a call to artists, but maybe we can get a student body to one school, you know, obviously begins again in the fall, should it begin again. Have them kind of submit and do a contest and see if any of that mirrors what we would like to see and feel. And of course, have it go through Art in Public Places. Just a thought.
Commissioner Gongora.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was going to say we should involve the school and the art program. I think that would be cool. And for this amount of money, I think we probably can find $50,000 in this year's budget rather than roll it over to next year. If the will is there, I'd say, I guess we'd ask, can we find the money? And if we can, just put it on the June 24th agenda for approval by the commission.
John, I think we could probably find that $50,000 in the current budget.
Your hand is up.
Yeah, I think the direction would be take this direction and see if we can, go back through the capital budget that we're proposing and see if there's an opportunity to go ahead and include it there. And then we could report back at the second budget workshop on July 17th to let you know if we were able to go ahead and incorporate it.
It's not my item. It's Commissioner Areola's. But actually, my comment was for the amount of money. Do we have the money now in this year's budget? Can we find it in this year's budget?
Well, unfortunately, this year's budget is super tight given, you know, all the COVID-19 impact. So it's actually easier to try and get it into next year's capital budget. So we'll know in you know, 3 or 4 weeks if that's doable or not. And, you know, and given that it's a smaller amount of money that we're talking about, I feel fairly confident that we can squeeze it in.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, I think maybe if we are challenged to find money for this, we might be able to find a corporate sponsor or, you know, raise the money, especially if it's something specific to Miami Beach High, you know. But I think we should move forward, take something ugly, make it beautiful, and maybe inspirational for the kids that attend the school.
Well, Commissioner, we can start the call to artists or working with student artists at Beach High and elsewhere, and then most of the cost would be ultimately the company that does the paint work. So we can get it started. And who knows? Yeah, maybe the dollar, because we're using student artists, it's a lot cheaper. Who knows? But we can certainly get it going while we're identifying funding.
Okay, great. Is that all for today's agenda?
It sure is. Hopefully that was enough. It's a lot of material. I just want to invite any commissioner who has any questions, if they have maybe a little bit more time to absorb some of that information, happy to schedule one-on-ones to go through any additional detail you may need. And also, again, if you have any, insights versus regarding how to balance the budget approaches, the things you'd like to see, or any additional capital projects that you may become aware of, the sooner we can get that input, the better.
Okay. Mayor Gelber, you had your hand up. And then Vice Mayor Steinberg, Gongora, and Miner all have their hands up. I don't know if those are leftovers. Okay, I see the hands going down, but I did see Commissioner Miner has his hand up, but I think Mayor Gelber had his first.
No, I don't have my hand up.
Okay, I think you were adjusting.
I think I was waving at my wife.
Got it. Okay, then it's Commissioner Miner. I think you have the final word.
And I wasn't trying to get the final word, but just I agree with my colleagues on this. Actually, before I realized it was $50,000, I was going to raise the issue that Miami Beach Senior High had pre-COVID brought it, had been trying to get some funding for their outdoor cafeteria beautification project. But I think this is, sorry, I was going to suggest that maybe we speak to them, find where they want to allocate the monies. But since it's only $50,000, I think they're two separate, completely separate items.
Okay, well, happy birthday again, Commissioner Miner.
Thank you.
Hopefully you're doing something fun today besides having a commission meeting.
This.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to thank John Woodruff and Jimmy Morales for a very good presentation, very thorough presentation today.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Our budget and finance team has been working very hard, as well as all the operating departments that contribute all the information and everything. So a big thank you to all. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day, everyone.